ever get the feeling that everything's completely fucked up?
Oh, I don't know. Is it that we collectively thought Steve Jobs was a great man, even when we knew he made billions off the backs of children? Or maybe it's that it feels like all our heroes are counterfeit. The world itself's just one big hoax. Spamming each other with our running commentary bullshit, masquerading as insight. Our social media faking as intimacy. Or is it that we voted for this? Not with our rigged elections, but with our things, our property, our money. I'm not saying anything new. We all know why we do this. Not because Hunger Games books makes us happy, but because we want to be sedated. Because it's painful not to pretend. Because we're cowards.
And it is a good day. This is Mike and or Maltos reporting to you from the internet for Sunday, August the 21st, 2016. You're listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global sitrep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening in and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow along and check our facts by going to newsreel.ca. That's newsreel.ca. This is a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio Talk each and every Sunday afternoon at 1400 hours Pacific Time. And that's also, I guess, 1700 hours Eastern Time. We also record live every Thursday night, except for the last few Thursday nights due to technical difficulties, at 1730 hours Pacific Time or 2030 hours Eastern Time on Mumble. If you go to the newsreel.ca website, just click on the Participate tab at the top of the page, and there you'll find the instructions for how to get onto the Mumble server. And with me today are nobody, because actually Smurf was supposed to show up, but I guess he's busy. And everybody else is busy. Iron Angel is doing traveling for something there. And so everybody just kind of, whatever. Also, it might have helped if I had just jumped into the IRC this morning and maybe said, hey, I'm doing a show right now, but, you know, in preparation for this show, I completely forgot to do that. So, my bad. Although I did tell everybody last night, or 2 nights ago, or whenever the heck it was. So, anyways, there was warning. Nobody showed up. Thanks, guys. Whatever. I'll just talk to myself. Although I am on Mumble still, so if somebody shows up, maybe. So this is the first time that I've been able to broadcast, get on the air for, month and a half or so here now, almost 2 months here now. Like Sean said last week, I have moved to, British Columbia from Costa Rica. Yes, finally did manage to land a job once again. Hopefully the same shit doesn't happen with what happened with the last one, get laid off and all that stuff. But already out of the probation period, so that's good. They only had a 1 month probation versus a normal 3 month probation, so that's kind of good. So I got my benefits and everything right now, and that's good. My pay's gone up again because I'm out of probation, so that's all good stuff for Maltos, right? However, Sean did report incorrectly. I am not located in Surrey, BC. I was looking to get there because it's relatively cheaper for some apartments and stuff. However, I wasn't able to find anything. Apparently, it's just, you know, difficult as fuck to find something. to find something in the area. Housing boom and crisis and all that fun stuff. So I did end up finding a place, fortunately not on my own, which... kind of sucks, but it's not too bad. Guy needed a roommate, and so I just moved in with him. Then, pretty cool guy. And I actually live right in downtown Richmond, BC instead. So, still in the greater Vancouver area. So, that's good because I work in Vancouver. So, yay! And just so people know, I am working as a CAD technician, which is the same job I've had for the last X amount of years, just with a different company. So, it's pretty fun. It's I'm getting the hang of it here now. It's still a bit iffy at times, but, you know, and of course, because of all the past experiences I've had with other employers, I still have, I'm still looking out for other jobs and stuff. Just in case, right? Because if I get screwed over, I want to have, my foot in the door somewhere else. Or kind of leaning towards that anyways, right? So that's that was my month or so. Met Sean Kennedy. Actually, the week I came up for my interview here, I met Sean Kennedy. Thanks to the help from Sean and or Gatekeeper and or Circuit and or whatever the fuck he calls himself these days. He did actually kind of set up a meet and greet there or whatever. So I spent 3 hours on my last day here for through my interview week hanging out with Sean Kennedy. So that was pretty cool. He showed me DS Tactical and talked about the new book, Immersion. Holy crap. Ambient Reports 2087 and all that stuff. Same thing you guys heard on the interview that he had, because that was actually the same week. That was actually just a few days before the interview. So that was very cool. I got his book, copy of his book, so that's pretty cool. The Immersion book, that is Immersion 2086, and I've only gotten through about the first chapter because things have been so hectic around here and so screwy for time that I actually haven't been able to read it, and I've been under so much stress. But now, because I'm actually on to an earlier shift because I'm not being trained anymore, I can go in at 8 o'clock versus 9 o'clock every morning, so it actually gives me some time, because it's about, if I take the train from work, walk to the train station, catch the train downtown, and then jump to the other train downtown to Richmond, that takes me about an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half or so. But if I wait for the bus and go to the train line, I get about halfway down the last train line I have to catch, and you know, it's quicker. It's only 45 minutes to get home, so I got a lot more time now, so yay. But before I did, so maybe I can actually start reading that book finally. But yeah, so enough of my boring stuff. This is going to be a relatively short show. I mean, I've got six articles here to go through, but I think they're mostly pretty short. So nobody really sent in a lot of stuff. So anyways, if anybody wants to send stuff in, because I'm going to be doing a show at the very least. I'm not sure when Sean's going to be back on. He's got some stuff that he's doing and stuff. He just got a new job and all that and whatnot, moving and all that stuff too. So he might come on in another week or so, or he might come on whenever he gets things settled down. So, yeah, so you can send us stuff at info@newsreel.ca. That would be awesome. Because I think Weandy was the only person who sent stuff in the past week. And, yeah, good stuff. But, you know, you can't just let Weandy steal the show here. I mean, you just can't. It's Weandy. So, anyways, besides that crap and random talking to myself. Wow. Yeah. This completely sucks. I'm so glad nobody's listening live, because there's actually no background music, because I haven't gotten that set up yet. I have to get the virtual audio cable crap set up that Sean has set up. I was reading into that the other day, and yeah, you know, I just like, I'll do it when I do it. So it's good nobody's listening live. Anyways, into the news. Insecurity news. Thank you to Weandy for this link here. Linux vulnerability leaves top sites wide open to attackers. Fun. A flaw in the Linux operating system lets hackers inject malware into downloads and expose the identities of people using anonymizing software such as Tor, even for those who aren't using Linux directly. So this is affecting anybody. In a Wednesday presentation at the U.S. Enix Security or USENIX Security Symposium in Austin, Texas, researchers with the University of California, Riverside, showed that the flaw lies in the Transmission Control Protocol, TCP, used by Linux since late 2012. The networking blunder is present in the Linux kernel, the core of its operating system, and can be exploited by malicious actors to determine whether two systems are communicating with each other, and even inject malicious data into or break their connection. And there's a video, I guess, explaining that. So it's titled Pure Off-Path TCP Attack Demo by Using a Side Channel in Recent Linux Kernel. So you can check that out. I guess that's your Rec Media for this week. Even though it's not on the list. At the symposium, the researchers demonstrated the exploit by injecting code into a live USA Today page that asks visitors to enter their emails and passwords, which was possible because pages on USA Today are not encrypted. Perhaps most importantly, the intercepting of data doesn't require a man-in-the-middle attack, where a connection will covertly intercept, collect, and pass forward information between two parties. Instead, attackers can just send packets of data to the two targets with spoofed credentials. Quote, through extensive experimentation, we demonstrate that the attack is extremely effective and reliable. Given any two arbitrary hosts, it takes only 10 seconds, to successfully infer whether they are communicating, to determine whether they're communicating. The team wrote in a white paper, if there is a connection, subsequently it takes also only 10 seconds to infer the TCP sequence numbers used on the connection. To demonstrate the impact, we perform case studies on a wide range of applications. And there's another thing here. That's not just a tweet, I guess. Anyways, Linux flop with millions of PCs, Android smart devices at risk. And there's a whole bunch of links. Because Linux runs in the backend on a majority of servers as well as on Android devices. Well, yeah, Android's Linux, more or less. Or, anyways, whatever. If Sean was here, he'd be like, no, it's not Linux. It's like something else. It's essentially a fork of Linux is what I understand. So whatever the fuck, I don't care. An enormous number of users might be left vulnerable. Even those using the much vaunted anonymizing software Tor could have their privacy compromised 90% of the time in an average of about 50 seconds. Well, that just sucks ass. In general, quote, in general, we believe that a denial of service or DOS attack against Tor connections can have a devastating impact on both the availability of the service as a whole and the privacy guarantees that it can provide, the researcher said. The team notes that because only version 3.6 or later of the Linux kernel has the flaw, systems running older software are not affected. They distributed a patch to fix the vulnerability, but they note a large number of individuals and networks will still be left exposed to miscreants, since the exploit only requires one unpatched party for the attack to work. Right? And, you know, a lot of networks and whatnot don't get patched. If it works, it works. Right? So hopefully a lot of people will get on that. So anyways, yeah, so even if you're running Tor, I'm assuming does that have to extend the VPNs too? Maybe. So yeah, that kind of sucks. But yeah, so hopefully people will get that set up and fixed on their systems and whatnot. Also, there's something, I'm not sure if that's the same thing or not. Actually, there's something. What the hell is that thing? There's something called. Oh shit. There's something on Android phones where there's a big scare. I think it was last week or something. Quadrooter, I think it's called. Is that what it's called? Or is that? Yeah, I think that's what it's called. Big scare about that. I can't remember what the hell it does. But yeah. So if you're running Android, which, you know, obviously a lot of people are nowadays, definitely check that out. See if your phone's vulnerable to that. Mine is. So I gotta ask around and like get pissy with my service provider and say, hey, yeah, you guys need to get an update for your phones because they're vulnerable to whatever the hell Quadrooter does, which probably isn't good. Chance of me being nailed by it, pretty slim, but at the same time, kind of want to get that stuff fixed. So that's something else you guys should check out. Yeah. So into the next story here. Okay, yeah, there we go. In autonomous vehicle news, thank you to Weondi for this article. Uber's first self-driving fleet arrives in Pittsburgh this month. Dun, dun, dun. The autonomous cars launching this summer are custom Volvo XC90s, supervised by humans in the driver's seat. Insert picture of a very sexy looking car. I gotta say, that is sexy. Wow. Just wow. Anyways, sorry. Sploosh. Near the end of 2014, Uber co-founder and chief executive officer Travis Kalanick flew to Pittsburgh on a mission to hire dozens of the world's experts in autonomous vehicles. The city is home to Carnegie Mellon University's robotics department. Okay, that explains why they're doing it there. Which has produced many of the biggest names in the newly hot field. Sebastian Thrun, the creator of Google's self-driving car project, spent 7 years researching autonomous robots at CMU, and the project's former director, Chris Urmson, was also a CMU graduate student, or grad student, whatever. Quote, Travis had an idea that he wanted to do self-driving, says John Bears, who had run CMU's National Robotics Engineering Center for 13 years before founding Carnegie Robotics, a Pittsburgh-based company that makes components for self-driving industrial robots used in mining, farming, and, of course, the military. I turned him down 3 times, but the case was pretty compelling. Bears joined Uber in January 2015, and by early 2016 had recruited hundreds of engineers, robotics experts, and even a few car mechanics to join the venture. The goal? To replace Uber's more than 1 million human drivers with robot drivers as quickly as possible. Wait, right? Because, yes, Uber's a good concept, you know, if you need a taxi or something like that. Why pay the taxi rates? Why not just pay a private guy to drive you around? Well, at the same time, you gotta think Uber's making money off that. So how do you make more money? Well, you cut the drivers out of the equation, right? So kind of cool thing, but also kind of a sucky thing, right? Because, you know. Yeah, so the plan seems audacious, even reckless, and according to most analysts, true self-driving cars are years or decades away. Kalanick begs to differ. We are going commercial, he says in an interview with Bloomberg Businessweek. This can't just be about science. And actually about this year, I saw that was about a month ago. It might have been before I left Costa Rica. There was a video. They were reviewing one of the Tesla, I think it was a Tesla SUV or something like that. And apparently it's self-driving. Well, obviously, right? But so I don't know what they mean. Like, oh, it's true self-driving is not... not going to be around for years or decades. Like, it's kind of here already, I believe, to one form or another. I mean, yeah, the guy was sitting, you got to have a guy sitting behind a steering wheel, but at the same time, the steering wheel's moving on its own. I'm pretty sure that's self-driving. Yeah, there's some issues with it, but guaranteed in another 5 years at the most, things are going to be, you know, I'm thinking pretty leveled out there with you know, all the wrinkles ironed out with it. But anyways, starting later this month, Uber will allow customers in downtown Pittsburgh to summon self-driving cars from their phones, crossing an important milestone that no automotive or tech company has yet achieved. Google, widely regarded as the leader in the field, has been testing its fleet for several years, and Tesla Motors offers Autopilot. That's what I was talking about earlier. Essentially, a souped-up cruise control that drives a car on the highway. Earlier this week, is it only do it on the highway? Okay, whatever. Maybe I should look into that more. Good job, Maltos. Earlier this week, Ford announced plans for an autonomous ride-sharing service, but none of these companies has yet brought a self-driving car sharing service to market. Well, of course, because they're all, you know, people who are designing the cars, so they kind of have a bit more on their plate right now. Uber's Pittsburgh fleet, which will be supervised by humans in the driver's seat, well, yeah, for the time being, so you're going to have people driving the cars temporarily. Consists of specially modified Volvo XC90 sport utility vehicles outfitted with dozens of sensors that use cameras, lasers, which I believe that would be LiDAR actually, radar, and GPS receivers. Volvo Cars has so far delivered a handful of vehicles out of a total of 100 due by the end of the year. The two companies signed a pact earlier this year to spend $300 million to develop a fully autonomous car that will be ready for the road by 2021. Awesome. So again, 5 years from now. The Volvo deal isn't exclusive. Uber plans to partner with other automakers as it races to recruit more engineers. In July, the company reached an agreement to buy Otto, that's OTTO, not AUTO, a 91-employee driverless truck startup that was founded earlier this year and includes engineers from a number of high-profile tech companies attempting to bring driverless cars to market, including Google, Apple, and Tesla. Uber declined to disclose the terms of the arrangement, but a person familiar with the deal says that if targets are met, it would be worth 1% of Uber's most recent valuation. That would imply a price of about $680 million. Otto's current employees will also collectively receive 20% of any profits Uber earns from building an autonomous trucking business. Ooh, okay, lots of money going around. Otto has developed a kit that allows big rig trucks to steer themselves on highways. I believe this is... Do we have this in an episode a while back that had the driverless truck challenge or something like that. I think that's the same company. Or one of the companies that was involved in that. Otto has developed a kit that allows big rig trucks to steer themselves on highways, in theory freeing up the drivers to nap in the back of the cabin. The system is being tested on highways around San Francisco. Okay, maybe it's just an American company. I don't know. Aspects of the tech will be incorporated into Uber's robot livery cabs and will be used to start an Uber-like service for long-haul trucking in the U.S. Uber-like service for long-haul trucking. So I guess, you need a load delivered? Call the Uber truck. I guess that's how that would work. Building on the intercity delivery services like Uber Eats that the company already offers. Already offers. Not officers, Maltos. Calm down. The police are not here. The auto deal is a coup. It's a coup for Uber in its simmering battle with Google, which has been plotting its own ride-sharing service using self-driving cars. Otto's founders were key members of Google's operation who decamped in January because, according to Otto co-founder Anthony Lewandowski, quote, "we were really excited about building something that could be launched early," unquote. Yeah, so insert another picture there. Wow, this is a really long article. Longer than I thought it was. Holy crap, it's super long. And in interest of keeping this show short, I'm actually going to end it there because I'm only about halfway through the damn article. And, when you're reading by yourself and nobody else is there to, say stuff, it's kind of boring. So, you can read the rest of that. It's all there. So, very cool. I think you get the gist of it. So, yeah. In ye old airship news. Should actually be ye new airship news. Airlander 10 airship makes maiden voyage in Britain. The world's largest, and there's a video there, I guess. Yeah. I heard about this a few days ago before it took off. That delayed it, I guess, if you mind. So, but the world's largest airship, Airlander 10, completed its maiden trip on Wednesday at London's Cardington Airfield after a postponement due to technical concerns on Sunday. Sorry. The flight of the 92-meter-long ship, nicknamed the Flying Bum, yep, that's what they're nicknaming it, because of its shape, lasted for about half an hour. The airship completed a series of flight maneuvers and landed safely. According to Stephen McLennan, the CEO of the airship's manufacturer, Hybrid Air Vehicles, the aircraft is a mixture of airplane technology, airship technology, and helicopter technology. Oh, that just sounds sexy right there. It costs more than 30 million pounds, I guess, or is that euros? Whatever. Around $50 million Canadian, luckily this is a Canadian website, to manufacture such a large aircraft. McGlennon said that a Chinese company participated in the technical design of the aircraft, which can carry a 10-ton payload. So that's quite a bit of weight. The engines come from a company that is now owned by a large Chinese company. And we are also talking to some of the major Chinese tech companies who have a focus in aerospace, trying to find ways in which we can bring this tech into China and across markets where Chinese companies have many interests, he added. The U.S. Air Force initially invested money in developing the aircraft, but had to abandon the project because of budget cuts in 2013. Oh, that sucks. He said there will be 100 such aircraft flying across the world in 5 years for recreation, cargo transport, and disaster relief. The aircraft does not need a runway to take off, which means it can land on water, ice, or even desert, and it can travel up to 100 kilometers per hour. So this thing, that's awesome. It looks essentially like two blimps that have been sutured together in the middle. That's awesome. So I guess it can land on the ground versus needing like a mooring. Yeah, I don't see any mooring attachments on it. Like, you know, the old Zeppelins and current blimps, they have like a... I kind of want to say nipple. I'm assuming that's probably not what it's actually called. But they have like that docking point at the very tip of the airship, typically. And they have to dock with a mast, right? So, I don't see that on this. So I'm assuming it could just actually land on the ground, is what I'm getting out of this. Also, hence why they're saying it's a combination of helicopter and all that stuff. They can just rotate the things and make them move up. So, that's actually pretty sexy. Just actually land it wherever you want and not have to have like a field crew there. That's awesome. Also, 100 kilometers per hour for something like this. How fast do blimps and airline and ships usually go? I need to find it out. Blimp airspeed. Let's see. Let's see what Google finds. Blah, blah, blah. Let's see here. Sorry, this is taking a while. Okay, so Yahoo Answers is the first thing I brought up. 35 miles per hour. So that's, yeah. For the Goodyear blimp, I guess. Or 53 miles per hour on the GC20. So that's, okay, it's about the same speed as the, I guess, of this. Yeah. Altos, miles to kilometers. 35. Let's see what 35 is. Just 35 is 56 kilometers an hour. 50 some odd is 80 kilometers an hour. So it's faster than a blimp. That's good. So that's all I have for that one. And now we go into the next story. So in tech news, new battery technology could double capacities for consumer electronics, which is something that we, of course, all want. We more need more. We want our batteries to last longer. It would be handy, you know, to not have your smartphone die halfway through the day just because you use it. A startup called Solid Energy says that it has developed a new design for a safe rechargeable lithium metal battery, potentially revolutionizing energy storage for small devices like smartphones and wearables. Breakthroughs in materials science means that former MIT postdoctoral student Chao Hu's, sorry if I screwed your name up, buddy, but that's what it looks like, his company can produce batteries with double the energy density of current generation lithium-ion batteries. This means that they can either be twice as powerful as a lithium-ion battery of equivalent size, or pack that same capability into a unit half as large, according to MIT News. I guess that's what the picture at the top is about. It shows the back of an iPhone 6. Shows where the battery is, how big it is, and shows that's a 1.8 amp hour battery, which is an 1800 milliamp hour battery, which is how it should be listed actually. And they have a 2000 milliamp hour solid energy battery beside it, and it's about half the size. So, yeah, smaller batteries are good, right? That is an ad, so I'm not going to read that. Lithium metal batteries have long been a subject of particular interest to researchers given their high energy density. Until now, though, efforts to create a rechargeable version have been unsuccessful. The anode material tends to break down over time, quickly rendering them unusable. Hu's design, however, not only solves the problem of rechargeability, it does away with a bulky solid anode, replacing it with a sophisticated hybrid that uses both a thin lithium metal foil and a non-flammable liquid electrolyte, MIT News reports. But better smartphone batteries are far from the only thing on Solid Energy's radar. The company's latest venture funding round completed in January, adding $12 million in Series B money to the company's existing $8.5 million stake. Okay. The lead investor in that round was General Motors Ventures, and Solid Energy has been upfront about its desire to use its batteries in electric cars. Okay, so their GM is backing these guys. The company's roadmap, which you can click right there, there's a link for it, suggests that Solid Energy's batteries could be used in smartphones as early as next year, that's 2017, with the automotive sector next on the list. So that is very, very cool. And we've actually talked about, we've had different battery or articles and whatnot come up in the last X amount of episodes on NewsReel. I'm not really sure if this one's related, but very cool. I think it's probably just a different company. Let's just keep it fresh in our minds. We want better batteries. We got two more articles left to go. This next one is from Weandi in Don't Forget to Use Encryption News. I was actually reading this on the train the other day because I had nothing else to do, and it just jumped up right when I was on the train. Having nothing to hide doesn't mean... Oh, that's not even the title. There we go. Good job, Maltos. Canadian court ruling on SMS privacy, that's text message privacy, for those who don't know what SMS is, means that you shouldn't be using SMS. And yes, this is Canadian, so you can imagine that's probably US too. and vice versa. Having nothing to hide doesn't mean you should ignore your privacy, especially when keeping messages secure and private is so damn easy. Yes, and I added damn, because seriously. An Ontario Court of Appeals... An Ontario Court of Appeals has ruled that your SMS messages are not private. Let me repeat, are not private. And once sent to the ether, that's in quotation marks, so that's what they said, once they're sent there, they are no longer under your control. Vice, this is the website this is being pulled from, I guess, or something. Anyways, there's a link there for that. There's another article, I guess. Has a full write-up about the decision that interested parties should read. And guess what? Everybody should be interested in this. But the short version is this. Text messages are like email and not subject to the same protection that voice calls have. They aren't a private conversation, and you shouldn't keep thinking that they're private. This has, which kind of makes sense, because you think about it, if a phone call, I guess, I don't know how the hell they're still private, but I can understand that, because you're talking to somebody, they're talking to you, you know who you're talking to, you can hear them. Text message, you send a text message to somebody, it's been read, who's reading it? Is it that person who owns the phone, who you are actually sending the message to? Or is it somebody else who just happened to pick up their phone, and they're looking at it, right? So, I can see it from that perspective. But again, let's keep reading here. And I am not trying to condone this or anything, obviously. Because this is bad. let me just put that disclaimer out for you. This has some far-reaching implications for some folks, while others won't care because they have nothing to hide. Or don't care what happens in a Canadian court. Okay. But we should all be concerned. And now is the perfect time for you and the people you talk with to switch to something else. Preferably something that's cross-platform and, well, you know, offers encryption. That's always a good thing to have. It should just have encryption no matter what. I've got nothing to hide either, but I still expect and demand a little bit of privacy. We don't have the perfect suggestion for a messenger app. This is from Android Central, this article, actually. Different people will want different things, after all. But we do know there are more than a handful of cross-platform apps. That's, you know, iOS, Android, Windows, phone, etc., that can be used to keep private conversations private, regardless of what a judge thinks. WhatsApp comes to mind. Actually, no, it doesn't. They have it here, and yeah, WhatsApp is encrypted by default now as of June of this year or something like that. But at the same time, it's Facebook. No, stay away from WhatsApp. Just kill it. As does Signal or Telegram. I've got nothing to say about those. I haven't looked into them. Okay, there's random, like, quotes in here. We should all be concerned about this ruling, and now is the perfect time for you and the people. We already read that. Okay, why the hell did they do that? If you're the go-to person for all things tech in your circle of family and friends, have a look and see what you like and would recommend. If you're not, then point them here. Stay safe and stay private. There are other apps. BBM, I believe, is encrypted. I'm not 100% sure on that. I know BBM on a BlackBerry is encrypted. Oh, that's another company. Yeah, they're all owned by corporations. So you're kind of fucked either way. Right. So, but, yeah, you know, do your research, okay? Line, I believe, has encryption. Actually, it does have encryption. And there's a few other ones. You can just use Mumble and use that. That's encrypted by default. Actually, I don't think there's any other option. It's just encrypted. And, yeah, a whole bunch of stuff out there. I got a whole bunch of stuff on my phone that I have to use because everyone I talk to uses a friggin' different app, so I have to use a whole bunch of different apps. But when it comes to WhatsApp, no, I never install that crap on my phone. Ever, ever, ever. Same with anything Facebook. Never, ever, ever, because Facebook is the devil. But, you know, make up your own mind on that. And, yeah, go from there. But definitely, definitely encrypt your stuff. Watch what you're saying, into who, and where. And into our final story for today, in space news. Yes, in space news. China launches its the world's first quantum satellite. QuEST is what it's named. A QuEST satellite designed to establish hack-proof quantum communications. I guess there is a 44-second video of them launching that thing. China on Tuesday launched the world's first quantum satellite, which will help it establish quote-unquote hack-proof communications between, well, you know, it'll be hack-proof until a certain time. Communications between space and the ground, state media said, the latest advance in an ambitious space program. The program is a priority as President Xi Jinping, I don't think I screwed that up, maybe I did, has urged China to establish itself as a space power. And apart from its civilian ambitions, it has tested anti-satellite missiles. Okay. The quantum experiments at space scale. Oh, that's what it's called. The quantum experiments at space scale, or QES satellite, was launched from the Jiquan Satellite Launch Center in the remote northwestern province of Gansu in the early hours of Tuesday morning. The official Xinhua news agency has said, there's a link there for that if you want to click on it. In its two-year mission, QES is designed to establish hack-proof quantum communications by transmitting uncrackable keys from space to the ground, it said. Quantum communication boasts ultra-high security, as a quantum photon can neither be separated nor duplicated, it added. It is hence impossible to wiretap, intercept, or crack the information being transmitted through it. The satellite will enable secure communications between Beijing and Urumqi, Xinhua said. I screwed up that city name, but whatever. Referring to the capital of China's violence-prone far western region of Xinjiang, where the government says it is battling an Islamist insurgency, just like everywhere else on the planet. The newly launched satellite marks a transition in China's role from a follower in classic information technology development to one of the leaders guiding future achievements, Pan Jianwei, the project's chief scientist, told the agency. Quantum communications holds enormous prospects in the field of defense, it added. It added, or he added, whatever. Messages that can't be wiretapped or cracked. If the tests are successful, okay, so they're just testing this right now, China will take a major step toward building a worldwide network that can send messages that cannot be wiretapped or cracked by conventional methods. It moves the challenge from a foreign eavesdropper to a different domain, said Alexander Ling, principal investigator at the Center for Quantum Technologies in Singapore. Lots of people around the world think having secure comms at a quantum level is important, or just having secure comms in general is pretty damn important, as we heard of in the last article. The Europeans and the Americans had the lead, but now the Chinese are showing the way forward. Quantum communications use subatomic particles to securely communicate between two points. A hacker trying to crack the message changes its form in a way that would alert the sender and cause the message to be altered or deleted. I guess kind of like a checksum thing, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Researchers around the world have successfully sent quantum messages by land, but a true satellite-based network would make it possible to send quickly encrypted messages in an instant around the world and open the door to other possible uses for the tech. Cybersecurity has been a major focus in recent years for China, which has pushed regulations aimed at limiting tech imported from the U.S. in the wake of Edward Snowden's revelations of widespread surveillance by the U.S. through the use of American hardware. Yeah, was it like hard drives and stuff? Yeah, fun stuff. China has in turn been repeatedly accused by the U.S. of hacking into computer systems to steal commercial secrets, well, why not, and information that could harm American national security. Guess what? You guys aren't exactly allies, so yeah, that's, we're going to accuse you of this. Well, yeah, sure, whatever. We're not allies, so you're kind of supposed to sabotage each other and get trade secrets from each other and stuff. That's just how that works. Yeah. Malta's running off again. China has rejected claims that it runs a state-sponsored hacking program and says that it is among the leading victims of cybercrime. And of course, the Americans say the same thing. Oh, we're victims of cybercrime! It's like, yep, yeah, you got that whole division or so that just does that to everybody else, so whatever. I mean, just screwing everyone else over. Bunch of idiots. Quantum messaging could become a major defense against hackers and have applications ranging from military and government communications to online shopping. Because, you know, you don't want people finding out that you're buying sex toys on the internet, so quantum communications it is. The biggest challenge, Ling said, is being able to orient the satellite with pinpoint accuracy to a location on Earth where it can send and receive data without being affected by any disturbances in Earth's atmosphere. The results of China's test will be closely watched by other research teams, he said. It is very difficult to point the satellite accurately, Ling said. You're trying to send a beam of light from a satellite that's 500 kilometers above you. Yeah, that's a bit tricky, but yeah, I'm sure you'll figure out a way. Future global standard? Huifeng, Huifeng Chao, a professor and quantum communications researcher at Hong Kong University, said that it was too soon to say if the tests will succeed, but added he expected quantum messages by satellite to become the global standard eventually. The theory is already there. The technology is almost there, he said. It's just a matter of time. The launch is a major triumph for China, which has spent years researching quantum tech and developing the satellite and other uses for it. China has previously announced the construction of a quantum link between Beijing and Shanghai that would be used by... Sorry, my throat's getting all raspy again. Between Beijing and Shanghai that would be used by government agencies and banks. China insists that its space program is for peaceful purposes. And here's where the media throws random stuff in at the end of an article or partway through an article, which doesn't really have anything to do with the article. But that's what they do. So this last paragraph. China insists its space program is for peaceful purposes. But the United States Department of Defense, or Defense Department, has highlighted its increased space, its increasing space activities, or space capabilities, I really can't read today, or ever, saying that it was pursuing activities aimed to prevent adversaries from using space-based assets in a crisis. And holy shit, yeah, let's look at the United States and let's learn from them. The people who put, you know, men on the moon, supposedly, whether they did or not, we still don't really know. Probably not. But they had a space program back in the 40s, 50s or so, ever since after World War II, essentially. Space program. You know, what were the rockets that they put people on? They were ICBMs, is what they were. The Saturn was derived from ICBM technology, the Saturn V. The Mercury, Mercury Redstone is actually what the rocket was called. The Mercury was a capsule, the Redstone was a rocket. Redstone rocket was a ballistic missile. They were all ballistic missiles, or at least based on them, right? So, I mean, and the U.S. comes in now and says, oh, yeah, you can't do that because you could, you know, put nuclear warheads over here. And, you know, the Obama is just like, that's what you guys did in the 50s. You just put it, you know, did all that development under the guise of the space program. Same with Russia. All done under the space program. It was the space race wasn't a space race, folks. It was a, it was the Cold War. So it was a nuclear arms race, right? Yes, they had the nukes. They had the capability of developing nukes and deploying them. The biggest problem was being able to deploy them to the other side of the world properly, right? So, and in such a way that they couldn't be hit, which is, again, why they put them through space, right? Put them up, drop, put them in a low orbit. Maybe not necessarily an orbit, but ballistic trajectory. Again, ballistic missiles, why they're called that. And then, yeah, have them come in super, super damn fast, and boom, you nuke somebody. That's what it is. It wasn't a space race. It was a nuclear arms missile race. So, yeah. But I love how the U.S. is just like, oh, yeah, you can't do that. It's like with North Korea. Oh, yeah, you can't develop nukes. You can't develop missile technology. It's like, why not? You guys did it. You guys developed nukes, and you guys developed missile technology. Yeah, North Korea's crazier than a bunch of shithouse rats. But at the same time, I mean, let them develop it. I say let them develop it. First time they launch something that is going to get close somewhere or whatever, you just gut the country. U.S., Russia, France. Does France have ICBMs? Probably. I know England does. Britain, whatever they want to call themselves these days. Like four freaking names for that damn place. They all have enough ICBMs just on one sub that if Iran or North Korea or anywhere else that's kind of radical or whatever, supposedly, wanted to, we're going to send a missile over. Yeah, one missile. Or maybe even 10 missiles. Okay, sure. But, you know, the hundreds or thousands of missiles that these countries have? I mean, come on. There's not much of a threat. But that's just how Malthus sees it. There's still a threat. There's still people who would do stupid things against, you know, crazy odds, you know, but whatever. That was the articles for this week. We have one weekly hack this week, and it's kind of like a cyberpunk kit, but it's a weekly hack, so it's under weekly hack. It's the Pirate Box. Yes, yes. We've discussed this many times on the show, and I'm putting it back on because of the fact that I've actually bought all the components within the last 2 weeks for my very own Pirate Box. Something I wanted to do for a long time, and yeah, now I actually have the capability of using it. So I got a battery pack on the way in, or a power bank, or whatever they call them, 6,000 milliamp hour. Fully ruggedized, waterproof, so that's handy. Although they discontinued the model for some reason. I think they came out with a newer one. But it's got good reviews, so I could care less. So I got that coming in on Monday, supposedly, so I probably won't be able to get it till Tuesday. And what else? I got the jump drive. I actually got a lot of jump drives, so whatever, I can use either of those. Because I bought the wrong one the other day. I bought a USB 3, and apparently USB 3 pulls too much power from the USB port. And especially on a Pirate Box, it might not be a good thing. So I just bought a 32 gig drive. And so yeah, that's my my daily carry now, I guess. Because I can't use it in the Pirate Box. But I got lots of 2.0 drives with good capacities, so I'll use them. And I got the actual little TP-Link router, MR3020, I guess it is. And it's going to be coming in on Thursday or Friday next week, so that's good. So anyways, check it out. And I actually have the capability of actually putting this to good use, because I can put it inside my new backpack, which I have. Where the hell did it go? There it is. Thought the thing sprouted legs and walked away. I got like a little tactical day pack type thing. It's made by Mil-Spec Monkey. It's pretty cool. Which is tactical tailor, really. It's just a modified pack. But it's got enough space in it and stuff for being on the train every day, but it's got enough space on it. Then I can actually put the Pirate Box inside and keep it on, and do that when I'm on the train every day, because that's a shit ton of time, or on the bus. So that's cool. So definitely check that out if you haven't already. It's pretty cheap to put one of these together. You could do it with a Raspberry Pi. I was going to do that, but it's like the extra cost of all the other components, which I don't have, and I'm doing it cheap, and this is my first time. So yeah, definitely check it out, though. It's pretty cool stuff. And no Rec Media this week, no Cyberpunk Kit this week. Yeah, so that was the show. So that's all we have for you this week, but don't worry, we'll be back again next week to make sure that you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free transmission brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. Please distribute this media in any way that you can. A special thanks goes out to Kevin Geek for use of his Murmur server, and the Army of the Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have any information that you'd like to send us, you can reach us at info@newsreel.ca, that's info@newsreel.ca, or by clicking on the Contact Us tab on newsreel.ca, our website. If you like the music in the background, please be sure to check out Rant Radio Industrial, because I kind of did this kind of ad hoc this week, so I didn't really know what to put in the back. No halftime song this week, obviously, because it's a short episode. Outro song is I Have No Idea. Haven't picked anything yet, but there will be one on there. So, but until next time, that's what server said. End of line.
dreaming. So does the pain. Words are meaningless and forgettable. Or ever wanted, or ever needed, is here in my arms. Words are very unnecessary. They can only do harm.
Enjoy the silence.